listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 252 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking about the tour's been canceled, now what? And what to do when your shows and tours get canceled, ways to engage with fans over the internet, and try to replace some of those interactions that happen at concerts. So that's what we're going to discuss today. Chris will be joining me later for that. But first, I want to acknowledge that I know many of you in the community are dealing with the fact that you lost gigs and tours and no idea when you'll be able to get new bookings and replace that revenue. And many in the artist community also work in the service industry because those jobs are typically flexible and make it easy to make some cash in between shows and tours. And those jobs are challenged now, so just understand that we're feeling it too here at CD Baby. Many people are in the same boat of losing shows. Just want to be there for you and know that we're here still supporting you. Fortunately, here at CD Baby, we can work 100% remote, so that's what we're doing. So you should see business as usual from us. We're still able to take calls and emails. We're still paying you every week just like normal. Nothing has changed there. And you're still able to distribute new tracks and get your music out there. No service interruptions as far as that's concerned. I would like to highlight that we put together this list of resources on our blog at diymusician.cdbaby.com that I would highly recommend you check out. It's got a lot of information, both about live streaming and engaging with fans online, but also a lot of resources that are popping up to help artists replace lost income, whether it's various programs or organizations that are offering help. So we're going to keep that updated and keep adding to it. It's very exhaustive and it's a good list. So I recommend it. I'll put a link to it in the show notes for this episode of the podcast. Like I said, I highly recommend you check it out. Next, I'd say a lot of us are sort of in isolation as we're staying home, practicing social distancing and all that kind of stuff. And I would just say, be sure to take care of yourself. Make sure that you're not inundating yourself with just all the crazy end of world scenarios that are out there that just add stress and anxiety. Just changing our routines can be stressful enough. Being by yourself for some is very stressful. I personally don't like it. I like to go to work and get out of the house and be around people. And so I've experienced it as well where, you know, this is not comfortable. This is not what I like to do. Be sure to take care of yourself. If you get some physical activity and take care of your mind as well. All those things are important. I've already had artists reaching out to me asking questions or just and sharing what they're doing and how they're changing things up to still try and move forward during this pandemic. So if you would like to reach out, you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. If you've got a tip you want to share, something you're doing that seems to be working, or just some ideas, or just want some help, feel free to call or email us. Also, if you just want to connect online and say, hi, I'm at K Bruner. That's the letter K and my last name, Bruner, B-R-E-U-N-E-R, on Instagram and Twitter. I always enjoy talking to artists there. And like I said, artists have already been reaching out and just trying to connect. It feels good to stay connected in these crazy times. So I'm always happy to talk to people. One thing I did want to answer is we've been getting a lot of questions about our conferences. The DIY Musician Conference in Valencia is supposed to happen May 30th and 31st. As of right now, this recording, we have not canceled. We're sort of in the wait and see mode. I would say if you have a ticket, don't worry. If it does get canceled, we will automatically refund it. So I would just say, just wait and see. We will let you know as soon as we have information. We're figuring a couple more weeks, then we'll be able to make a better decision. Because if suddenly things start getting better and that conference is pretty much planned and ready to go, so we don't have much more work to do on it. So it's just a matter of showing up and making it happen. So we're in a wait and see mode for that one. For Austin, the big conference in Austin, Texas, August 28th through 30th. That's so far out in the future that We're not making any adjustments or changing anything to that yet. The one thing that we are doing is we're the current early bird pricing that we have set right now, we're going to extend that longer than what we originally planned. So the price that's on the website right now will last a lot longer. It's a cheaper price than what the tickets will eventually be. So we're going to keep that in place. And I would say that there are some amazing airline deals right now. You can get airline tickets for like half price. So you might look into that. Make sure you're aware of their cancellation policies. Most of them are being very liberal right now with that, which is great. But you might just keep an eye on those. And again, if something did change with that conference and for whatever reason it had to be canceled, we would refund your tickets. Lastly, before we jump into the discussion of this episode, I just wanted to share a little anecdote. My band, Small Town Poets, we actually released a new song today. The day I'm recording this, it's March 18th. And I did the right thing and planned it out, and how I'm always telling people, you got to plan weeks in advance, did that. And of course, I was not planning for a worldwide pandemic to be unfolding right during the launch of our new song. And so I debated some about how to proceed, and I talk about that later in the episode. But the one thing that I did is I just sent an email to all our fans, and I was just trying to be honest. This is weird. This is not normal, and it's hard to know how to proceed. And the overwhelming response we got from fans was that, please keep releasing music. We need music more now than ever, and please keep going. And I just found that really encouraging, those words from fans, when I'm kind of wondering, is this striking the right tone? Is this weird? And like, no, please give us more music. And it was just a big reminder that one of the great things about art and artists and what we do as creators who create music is we get to bring beauty and joy and peace and understanding and questioning and just stuff to wrestle with. And in times like this, people turn to music and art, and it helps them through tough situations. So I just wanted to share that. I found it very encouraging, and I know a lot of artists are like, do we move on? Do we wait? And just a reminder that music is medicine in times like this, and it's what helps people through tough situations. So be encouraged in pursuing your craft, leaning into a creative moment where you can help bring understanding and peace to the world. As we go into this episode, Chris and I recorded it last week, and things escalated over the weekend, so I felt like the intro and discussion banter that we had didn't make sense anymore, so that's why I'm recording this. And I'm just going to drop everybody in. You're listening right now. I'm going to drop you right into where we start talking about some good news, and then we go into our discussion about how you can engage with fans when your tours and shows have been canceled. And of course, we have our listener feedback and questions at the end of the show, like always. And again, if you want to call in or email us, 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And here it is, dropping you right in to the good news. Before we get into the shifting of plans, we do have some happy news, Chris.
That is very true. Happy and exclusive news.
Ooh, exclusive. Today that we're recording, which happens to be Friday the 13th, it was announced that Amazon launched their Amazon Music for Artists, and CD Baby is an exclusive launch partner. So if you use CD Baby for music distribution, you have access to this now. And it's actually really cool. I posted some things on my Twitter and Facebook page that it shows Alexa voice data, like how many people are talking to Alexa and asking for your music. And the data was surprising. I thought there might not be much there, and quite a bit of activities happening there for us. And so that's one of the things where I've been talking about, you know, with our fans, Amazon seems to pop up a lot as a one of the platforms that they're using, and to see it in real time is pretty cool. And it is having an impact on our music. And honestly, more so than Apple Music.
Yeah, I think the thing I was most excited about with the feature you're talking about is the daily voice index, which is, again, it's sort of a real-time data about Alexa engagement. And the coolest part of that, I thought, was that, you know, people can request your music by song title, album title, or artist name, but also you could say to Alexa, you know, like, play that song that has these lyrics. And Amazon's getting lyrics from Music's Match and Lyric Find. So if you've done the thing that we've advised about entering your lyrics into Music's Match, then, you know, presumably Alexa can find your music when someone doesn't know what the name of the song is and they just have a couple words stuck in their head.
Yeah. You can head over to the DIY Musician blog and we have instructions on how to do it. It's simple. All you got to do is download Amazon Music for Artists app in the App Store.
Or Google Play for Android.
Yeah, or Google Play for Android. And then just follow the steps. And when you have the option to select your distributor, CD Baby's the only one. So benefit of using CD Baby.
There you go. I think the only other quick thing I wanted to say about this new app that they have, and it's not really a feature that they've like really built out at this point, but I have predictions, and they segment fan data between fans and super fans. And part of what informs how they define, you know, these listeners is whether they have bought physical product from you, CDs or vinyl on Amazon, which I think points to another really like unique power that Amazon will have, and that this app could be kind of a bridge, you know, down the road when they put more development into it or whatever, sort of between the e-commerce world of selling CDs and vinyl and all the digital streaming stuff that's happening on the various Amazon Music tiers. Because it's something Apple and Spotify don't have. Like, Amazon is the king of retail. So they, I don't know. I'm excited to see what they do with that.
That is really cool and a really good point. I think that's something that has Amazon poised to be the go-to service of the future. You know, I've been saying it for a while. I've said it a few times on the podcast that, you know, we're just at the beginning of the streaming era and there's lots of developments that'll happen. Spotify really showed how it's fundamentally different and can be a different experience for music listeners than what we were used to in a retail space. But Amazon is really poised to bring those two worlds together in a way that really helps us understand what our fans want and how to activate them to buy stuff. All right, well, let's move on. We've got our what to do when your tour is canceled or you can't tour discussion, and then we've got some feedback and emails later on in the show. So how do we want to dive into this, Chris, this topic?
Well, so I've been thinking about this a lot because I have a lot of friends on Facebook who are all different kinds of musicians. But, you know, you see messages about large events being canceled. And yes, that's bad for the economy. It's, you know, South by Southwest and huge concerts and stuff. And that's one aspect of what's going on now. But the thing that really concern me is when my friends who make their living playing house concerts or small rock clubs, you know, like they tour a lot, they rely on this. And now, oh my God, all of this is either being canceled for me or I'm trying to make a proactive decision to, you know, what I think is the right thing and cancel these things. And now I'm staring down at the next 6 months of my life, giving up such a huge amount of what I live on, which for a lot of musicians at that level isn't much to begin with. So that's why I started thinking about this. I'm just sort of concerned for my friends who really rely on live gigs. That being said, like they might have the least financial cushion to, you know, to sort of get through this. At the same time, some of these people are also the most thrifty and, you know, they're used to really being on a budget, being lean with how they live their life in general. So they might also have a good mentality going into this to, you know, be thrifty and kind of weather it in a unique way. But anyways, I was like, so what else can they do if they have two, three, four months of canceled gigs? How can they make use of that in a way where there's at least some tiny silver lining to the, you know, shit sandwich they've been handed? You have a silver lining on a shit sandwich? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I've never had one. I don't want
it's
one.
Just, it's the
I can't really see how delicious. There is a...
There's a sweet relish on the shit sandwich. Yeah,
that's the part you look forward to. Yeah. Originally, when things started getting canceled, what I was thinking about was initially, until more closures started happening, was that as an independent artist, when you look at your tours and reasons why you might need to cancel, that you don't need to react exactly like what you see with major label artists touring. Like, Pearl Jam just postponed their tour. Then, you know, they've got a new album out and other artists like that. For them, the economics of a tour is different. Like if they're not pre-selling tickets in all these cities that they have lined up to play, it looks problematic for the tour in general. So even if the show isn't until May, but the tour is not selling well because people are thinking about, you know, the where the state of affairs are right now, they're just going to move the whole tour. Pearl Jam will be fine. Those people will come to the shows later on and it makes more sense for them. As an independent artist, I would just say use wisdom when deciding, unless, you know, it's being forced closure, like it's going to be closed because the governor mandated that audiences bigger than X amount of people can't happen. But then there's also the idea of like, okay, don't just cancel all the way through summer because the economics of the average independent artist tour is different. Unless, you know, the venues force you to. But, you know, just think about some things like, is it worth moving ahead? Is it a small enough show? Will anyone come? Because even if it's like fits within the guidelines and you have Purell for everyone to hose themselves down with at the show, are they still just not going to come out? Maybe it's time to just move it. Or maybe people are ready to still get out there and get together because they've been at home so long. But so some of those things to think about that your cancellation procedures might be different than these massive events that you're seeing because, you know, they're bringing people from all over the world.
Yeah. And I mean, I canceled a show that I was supposed to have tomorrow night. That was a bigger local event for me. It's something I'm really looking forward to. And, you know, half of it was the sort of public health decision. And then the other half was responding to what I thought would be, well, people are concerned and they're not going to go out anyways. So why do I want to be stubborn and have this show that flops when it otherwise would, you know, like I talked it up. I knew there were going to be a lot of people there under different circumstances. And now I'm like, better that I just postpone and not just.
Yeah.
So anyways, I fell into that category myself.
So we're at that point. A lot of people are thinking, what can I do now? And so we have some ideas and a lot of it is stuff that we've been talking about on the podcast over the years anyway, but we thought it would be good to just kind of give a refresher, talk through some things again, talk about some options and things that you can do in order to keep momentum going in this time where, you know, you were going to be on the road, going to be getting some revenue. What are some alternate ideas if you can't tour? What do you want to start with on that list, Chris?
I guess the most obvious one and the one I see musicians talking about the most on Facebook, which would be live streaming.
Yep.
Something we've talked about a lot. We did an episode about it maybe 6 months ago, something like that. But, you know, you can go on any number of platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, YouTube, Periscope. There's no shortage of places for you to go live and play a concert. I guess I would say a couple things about this topic. I see some musicians who are full-time touring musicians who are used to having a very sort of sacred concert experience where they're on a stage and they have a reverent, quiet or engaged, captivated audience. And they're trying to make a similar circumstance like in their home or like they're setting up these like live streaming studios and stuff. And yeah, okay, that's cool. But like what I worry about is that they're not quite sure yet how different the live streaming experience is almost supposed to be than a concert experience. Like, so I would just say if you're going to try that, go into it with a different attitude. It's supposed to be more casual, more conversational. It's not like where you need to have the fanciest lights and the best home stage or whatever. Like, probably be better to not go that route. So, you know, just turn your phone on and go live.
Yeah, I think when people try to do it up, it actually and make it feel like a live concert experience with lights and, you know, setting a mood similar to a stage. It can work if you've got the right gear. I think a lot of times it overcomplicates it and can actually make the live experience terrible because if you're trying to do it with your phone, but then you've got this loud sound system, it's just not going to work. I think, you know, the outside of those streaming platforms or the social platforms you mentioned and video platforms, Stage It still exists. Concert Window, I saw someone mention you can use Concert Window. They've closed down, but Stage It exists. And that is show like live streaming shows for tickets. And that one really is intended to be more like you're seeing a live show that's normal and I'm just not there. But that's really problematic. I've seen people, you know, recommending that. And it's really problematic, and they don't take every artist. They, you know, because they're trying to sell tickets and take a portion of tickets. But I think your best bet is to go the live streaming route on Facebook or Instagram. I've seen more artists doing that just in the last couple of days. And give a refresher on the PayPal tip jar option.
Yeah, so you can set up a PayPal me link, and you know, just go to paypal.me, and you'll be able to sort of customize what your URL is, so that it makes sense when someone says paypal.me/Chris Robley or whatever, they know exactly what it is. And you can either put that in the video description, or if you're worried that an external link will hurt your organic reach on Facebook, you know, just go live and then make sure it's in, you know, one of the early comments you put. You can mention it in your broadcast. And I favor that route as opposed to the paid live streaming options that I think a lot of people are searching for, but I don't think it, sort of what you're saying, I don't think the audience demand is there for that. It's like live streaming's a different thing, but what you can do is just go live on the places where everyone already is, like you said, Facebook and Instagram, and then get that PayPal link in front of them. And then this sort of leads into another topic we're going to talk about, but I also think in these circumstances or under any circumstance where you've had to make, you know, take a financial hit because something changed in your life, it's okay to ask for help. Like, and so if you're playing up the PayPal link during your broadcast, like, great. I'm sure your fans are going to want to help you get through hard times. And so there's a number of ways to do that. I don't know if you want to move on from the live streaming thing, but you know, there's,
well, I was going to say a couple other things about it real quick. One, be honest with your community, let them know something happened. And as independent artists, I think sometimes we try to mimic the communication methods of major label artists that can sometimes feel cold and like they're not vulnerable. I think it's okay to be vulnerable with your audience. Say, look, our tour got canceled. We're struggling. We're going to do what we can to still play some live music for you. And if you could help us out, if you feel moved by it, throw us a couple bucks in the PayPal me tip jar and you'll really help us out. I think there's a balance there, but I think not saying it is a mistake. If you had tours and shows canceled and you're just trying to make do and do your best to still be there with the fan community, let them know, because that might make them feel a little bit more urgency in helping you out and or buying that shirt or throwing some few bucks into the paypal.me link.
Yeah, well, you know, you and I, we've disparaged crowdfunding a lot recently with the you know, the criticism that sometimes it feels like begging. I don't think circumstances like the one we're talking about is begging. I think if you need help and you ask for help and you're vulnerable about your circumstances, exactly what you're saying, that's not begging. You're like, there's a clear case to be made for why they should support you at this point when your entire, basically you got laid off through no fault of your own at all. So
on the live streaming front, I would, you mentioned like people looking for the paid services, and I, you know, talked a little bit about Stage It. I think the benefit about using the social platforms and trying the tip jar through PayPal or that method is that the one thing these social platforms are good, and we've said it over and over again, that when you go live on Facebook, it goes to the top of people's feeds. And this is where you can use the strength of these platforms to push for you, where if you go to a paid service, you're going to have to be pulling people in. And so you might have to do a ton more work to sell tickets to a live stream thing at a paid platform and get only a handful of people there and make the same amount of money as the opposite, where you get a lot of people understanding what's going on, throwing money in the tip jar, maybe going to buy merch and stuff like that, because the platform's going to push it for you. So that's why I like the non-paid platforms. And I think that's why all the paid platforms have struggled, just because that's not how people, the consumer experience, and people haven't felt the need like to go pay for a concert that's being streamed, at least not a lot of money for it.
Yeah, well, not to mention that once you are finished with your live stream on one of those public platforms, it's archived and it still has the PayPal me link or whatever case you're making for people to help you out. And that can be shared by all your fans after the fact. People can keep stumbling upon it. So all this stuff it has a life beyond you just going live when it's on a very public platform. if you have the sort of fan base to warrant this, you could think about creating like a private group or a, you know, like a an event or something, and do a live stream for each of the tour dates that you canceled. And, you know, the idea would be like, oh, this is the live stream for people in Philadelphia, and now the next night it's going to be for the people in New York City or whatever. Maybe that's cool if you have a very diehard fan base that you assume will tune in that way. But I think for most artists at the sort of indie level, it might be better to just go live, either make a habit of it or a weekly thing or whatever, or just do one super special live stream and try to get all your followers to watch it. But whatever route you do, I think the more people that can be included, the better.
All right. The next thing that I had on the list, and I think it's on your list as well, is Patreon and subscriptions. You know, so Patreon has several options for people to support you. Their model originally was every time I upload a new piece of content, I get X amount of money. So, you know, originally it was intended for Jack Conte when he was uploading a video that they'd get paid by their fans for that video. But they've also morphed just into a straight up subscription service. You may have multiple options there. So that's something that might be worth trying. I know that that's been more successful with artists that release serial content than just getting support straight up. But you might also look at Bandzoogle, our website partner. If you've got a Bandzoogle website, they've got a lot of options in there that do all of these things. They've got the subscription thing. They've got you know, the fan-funded option that is more flexible and that might give you the ability to do something that helps you raise some funds in light of a tour being canceled. And Bandcamp also has some features as well, a subscription feature. So this might be the opportunity for you to go check one of those out and try it with your fans. You may ask the community of your fans if that's something that they would dive in on, or you might just try it and say, look, my tour got canceled. That's pretty devastating for me as an artist. And so in its place, I'm just going to release a bunch of content, a bunch of new songs, a bunch of B-sides, unreleased demos. And if you subscribe here, you'll get it all. And that's an option. And that would be a good time to try that out.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I have anything to add to it, but I'm down for that. And I think, I also think it, on the earlier topic of asking for help, there's maybe in the current moment, there's a connection between patronage and what's the philanthropy and patronage can kind of go together maybe more now than they do in other times.
And I should definitely say here, because I have not tried a subscription option. I've looked at artists that have and looked at what they're doing. But if you are listening to this and you're doing it and have some tips, we'd love to get some tips. I know we had Jack Conte on the podcast, founder of Patreon, a while ago, but things have changed a lot since then. So we'd love to hear any tips or tricks from artists who are subscription offers with their fans or using Patreon or whatever you're doing. I'd love to hear about it and see what the rest of the community can learn from it.
One other thing I wanted to mention in the realms of getting assistance or help is that you might already be part of an organization or be connected to some kind of community that has something in place to help. And that could be musicians union, you know, local community organizations that support music in different ways. I know there are, you might even look into small business relief funds, in your county or city or town or whatever. And then there are also volunteer lawyer groups. And I've written about this in the past on our blog. But if for whatever reason you're coming into any legal issues because of tour cancellations or event cancellations, then you could probably get some good advice by, I forget what those things are called. They have some acronym. Is it volunteer? I won't remember what it is. But anyways, check that out. Google free legal advice from lawyers for artists.
I believe Music Cares is doing something. I saw somebody post that yesterday, like that you can submit to get some relief with these concerts, a lot of concerts being canceled. Look into those if you're somebody that's been impacted. A lot of those things are always there ongoing and we just don't talk about it, meaning the music community just doesn't really talk about it much or don't know they're there. But a lot of times they're there all the time, but right now, especially, they they have been doing some outreach in order to let artists know that those services are available. So those are some options for you to think about. Some other options with artists that, you know, this applies to artists that just don't tour as well, but get that merch store up and running and make sure that it's up to date. Make sure that you got all your latest stuff there. You know, we've talked about how to set up a merch store that where you don't even have to have merch, that people can buy and it gets auto created. I forget what episode we talked about that in, Chris.
Don't know, but it was within the last few months, so scroll through the feed.
It was like either the end of the year or one of the first ones from this year, but we talked about how we used Shopify connected to Printful, and as long as we have designs and you can upload designs for t-shirts, you don't have any startup cost except for the monthly fee for Shopify, and it's not that expensive. And you know, you don't make as much per shirt if you had them printed and were selling them, but you don't have to handle the fulfillment. And that's an easier way if you need to get something up and running and, you know, tour's been canceled, you don't have money for startup costs. That's a good way to get some revenue flowing. And the episode where we talk about that goes into detail how it works. But it's time to, you know, think about those things. Even just adding a new design sometimes will get fans buying. And that's something I'm going to be doing this weekend for us because we have a new song coming out next week. That's something like, you know, people that want to buy, maybe they're just waiting for something new. So go give a little refresh and make sure that there's options there so people who have bought before have new things to buy.
I think you actually, you put something on Facebook for what are, not artists, but what fans can do to help artists in these circumstances. And I feel like a few of those are worth mentioning in this discussion because sometimes you need to prompt your fans to take these actions. But, you know, just telling them that buying a vinyl or a CD or, you know, whatever physical products you have, t-shirts, really does go a long way. And, you know, you could make comparisons to, you know, comparatively small streaming revenue, but even streaming can be a big help if it's, you know, driving traction on the different platforms. So ask them to be putting your songs on playlists and sharing your music, or, you know, basically just now's the time to ask your fans to buy and or engage with your music.
You could almost take what I posted on Facebook and edit it a little and make it something that you send directly to your fans. Like, a lot of people have been asking us since our tour was canceled or our shows have been canceled how they can help support us. Here's what you can do. Most of them are completely free to you. One, listen to enjoy our music, you know, share it with your friends. Tell somebody, write a post on Facebook or shoot a quick video telling your followers why you like our songs or a particular song so much, and including a link, you know, just that idea that just them spreading, you know, your music and being a little more proactive in that area can be very helpful. And it doesn't, you know, bring in the windfall of cash instantly, but growing that fan base is what you need still. And if you want to monetize a fan base, you got to have that fan base, and having a growing fan base of people that are continuing to discover your music, and, you know, some of your dedicated fans might feel a little bit more motivated and take less prompting to do those things on your behalf. But, you know, even reminding them, like buying a CD, vinyl, or MP3 or USB drive, in the post I made, I said, what, even if you don't listen to the music, whatever format is, you know, most preferable, but it could be just for a piece of memorabilia as well.
Yeah. One thing I was thinking about is not just a way to take the concerts online through live streaming, but also to take some kind of fan engagement online. Because, you know, when you're touring, you have endless encounters with people, either drinks after a show or, you know, you're at the merch table talking to people or whatever it is. And without a tour, all that sort of extra community engagement goes away. So some ways to take it online, you know, we've talked a lot about your Twitter listening party that your band did, but I think something like that could really work in this context, just an event that is about your entire community all conversing together. You could start a TikTok dance competition or a lip sync competition. And like, if people are feeling like they're all isolated and quarantined anyways, like, they might love a chance to just get up and move their bodies and do some silly dance or something. So things like that. I even posted today a song I wrote with my daughter yesterday about this current situation, and we made a pandemic song, so maybe you can do something like that.
And it's an instant classic.
It is. My wife told me
it's to very do it. Clever.
My wife told me to do it, I don't know, a few days ago, and was like, I promise you it's going to go viral for me, like get way more engagement. And of course it does. It's got my adorable daughter. I wrote it in 15 seconds. You know, not really, probably wrote it in like 2 minutes. But of course I'm like, you know, the things I toil over for a year or more, like, yeah, some people listen, but you know, you just do something cute with a cute kid about a terrifying pandemic, it's going to go viral.
There you have it. We've been going about this all wrong.
Yeah.
This is the gift you've been waiting for.
Well, that's why I put cats in one of my, you know, recent music videos.
Cats and pandemics. That's what you need in order to have a career. No, you know, you mentioned online or you mentioned to me earlier that you weren't sure if it would be taken the right way. And I thought it was perfect. I thought it was cute. It was funny, but it wasn't obnoxious. It wasn't making some sort of statement about someone being wrong or we're right or this is going to be terrible. It wasn't, it felt like it was addressing the state of affairs and like we're all in this together. And I thought it struck the perfect tone.
Oh, good. All right. Well, I'm glad people are enjoying it.
Well, and, you know, hopefully when people in the future are listening to this and they're thinking about what their show's being canceled, hopefully it's not for more pandemics.
Let's keep things to a bare minimum, please.
That's just, you know, one per lifetime. That's good. I think what is interesting, what you've shown here is like leaning into the situation. Instead of acting like nothing's going on, I think oftentimes artists, you know, they try to keep this persona, this image, but instead you did something that leaned into it that was another way for people to feel connected and like, oh, he's going through the same thing we're going through. And now there's a song and now I feel this kind of fun connection. And I think that's something that is worth thinking about. I'm sure there's going to be a bazillion pandemic songs written.
Yeah.
And some of them will feel genuine. I think some of them will feel like they're taking advantage of the situation. And I think that's something that I would say, if you want my advice, to land on the genuine side. And if you just if you're just being opportunistic, I think it's going to show.
Yeah. Well, I hope ours was genuine. I was trying to be a little bit silly. People should go check it out. This will be my greatest work.
When I say opportunistic, I think more that that's more of like, I guarantee you in 2 weeks when I search Spotify, if I put in the word pandemic, I'm going to get all these songs that were just written really quick to be opportunistic into grabbing search terms and things like that.
Yeah,
that's what I mean by opportunistic, where
you said
stuff that happens on social is more often than not going to just be an authentic expression of some sort. But I'm talking like people going, oh, people are searching pandemic. Now I'm going to write a song called coronavirus because people are searching for that.
And right. Well, you mentioned people being at home and having time to write pandemic songs. But another obvious maybe silver lining from this is like, if you got to be home and you can't go on tour, maybe it is time to like tackle that new recording project or rebuild your website or sort of those bigger things that were always just on your list, but had to wait because you were booking and then about to execute a huge tour. And yeah, I mean, I also know taking a big financial hit from that doesn't necessarily make recording and or marketing your music or building a website or whatever any easier to make, or if you need to have a budget for it. But if you can be economical about that as well, maybe this is the time to tackle a huge creative project.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. That, and that was on my list because, you know, you're thinking about, I can't tour. What's one of the ways to engage with my fans? Release more music. I've been in a situation where our band can't tour regularly and we're all in different cities. So the live streaming thing is challenged. For us, the thing that really works is just releasing more music. And I'm really excited about the song we've got coming out next week. Actually, at the end of the show, I'll have to tell you how this has impacted our release plan and so forth. But
are you going to say it at the end of the show for everyone to hear, or just for
yes, me? Yes, okay. Yeah? Because I don't want to go on a big bunny trail right now. People accuse us of that anyway. So, but you know, releasing more music is a way that can be a really great way to engage with fans and just get them excited, get them listening to your whole catalog. You know, you have a new song. Now they want to go back and listen to other stuff. Now they're interested in a shirt or something else. And so I think, you know, getting new music out is always a good thing. It's something to talk about as well. Every time I've released music lately, I've gotten really excited because I've seen these platforms really help push the music further than I can on my own. And just with other things like social platforms and what you can do there, there's a lot of stuff that can happen. And, you know, it wasn't on my list, but this might be the time for you to sit down and figure out some Facebook ad funnels and things like that. You know, some stuff that's a little more complicated, but can still get your music in front of a lot of new people.
Totally. I had that on my list too. I was saying it's time to advance your skill set. So that could be like something formal, like a, you know, a continuing education credit or some online class or something. But it could also be like you've, you know, got some YouTube tutorials to watch about exactly that, like some advertising funnels on Facebook, or maybe you need to learn how to use Pro Tools or Ableton or whatever. Like, so yeah, this can be a time of learning. I also feel like on the flip side of that, you probably already have skills that you could offer to other people. So maybe if you're, you know, canceled a tour and now you're like, how can I make some money? Maybe people will pay you for your design skills or to set up Facebook ads for them. Or, you know, maybe you are a great mixing engineer. Like, now you have some time to sort of, I don't know, if you don't want to treat this like a gig economy kind of situation, but maybe you just take on some of that sort of freelance type work for people in your community. And also, this is weird advice, I think, to give. So this isn't advice, but I'd say under these current circumstances when everyone in the creative community is probably worried about money, maybe it's not time to charge full price, but maybe we all figure a way to help each other out, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, one thing I put on my list that I, you know, told fans that they could do to help artists is if they have design skills, you know, offer to design them a t-shirt or poster or something that they can add to their merch store that's new that they can sell. And there's ways you can have fun with it, or, you know, it could be just a new item, or it could be the tour's canceled tour shirt or something like that, you know, just to have fun with it. I come up with these ideas on the fly, Chris.
That's
they just
a good
come
one.
Out of me.
That's a really good one.
That could be a collector's item.
Tour's canceled.
I might have to make one because that would be really funny for us because there was no tour.
There was
to
no
begin
tour.
With.
I know. Speaking of this, now this is going down the rabbit hole a little bit, but so I had a show booked tomorrow that I canceled. And then of course, in today's newspaper, I've got a big, you know, half page thing with my photo and a nice write up for the show. I'm like, oh, of course you get the good press for the show that's friggin' canceled. I get it. I understand how you're working, universe.
Yes. Oh, man. Everything else is canceled. Let's finally run that Chris Robley feature.
Right. What one other common thing I see people talking about on Facebook, and this is not something that's going to make you any money, but maybe it's time to just rest a little bit, because I feel like touring musicians are some of the most high energy. I don't know if that's the right word. They kind of have to be firing on all cylinders a lot. And sometimes they burn themselves out just out of necessity because it's part of the job in a way. But like, maybe this is time to reset and just read a book, catch up on some sleep. And again, like, of course you wouldn't choose this over being out on the road and making money, but might be some valuable time spent.
Sit in the break and just take time to reflect and wait for new opportunity to open up, because it most likely will.
Yeah. I mean, and not like we want to think of these music endeavors as a competitive thing, but you at least have the peace of mind that everyone is slowing down or stopping right now. So it's not like you're at some disadvantage, you've got to rest and cancel, and everyone else is still just, you know, racing ahead. This is like everyone's on pause in a way. But that does lead me to one thing I wanted to say, which is that when the pause button gets turned off, be ready to sort of jump on the booking wagon sort of as soon as things start to return to normal, because then people are going to be, whether it's a week from now or a month from now, whatever, like people are going to be ready to go out and be together, See music, feel like life has returned to normal. So when that happens, like, get on it as quickly as you can.
Well, that's why I think it's good advice to think about, okay, I've got this moment where I've got extra time. I'm going to focus on getting new materials together, maybe a new pitch to the bookers, you know, after listening to our last amazing episode of the podcast, that you're going to get a new pitch, a new bio, just new materials, things, all those things that are always nagging, that always need to be updated, that we're terrible about doing. Get that stuff ready to go. It's too early right now as of recording this podcast. If you start reaching out to bookers this week, it may frustrate them because they're probably dealing with more of the short term of, is this show I've got scheduled in 2 weeks still happening? But start thinking ahead, maybe further ahead, and thinking, okay, what can we do in the fall? What can we, you know, what's a strategy, and how can we maybe turn this into an even bigger opportunity? Because on the backside of all of this, people are going to be eager to get out, go do stuff, feel like life is normal again. And how can we roll out a tour and maybe even have a theme or something, or just have more time to put effort into it? I know Tom Jackson commented on my post saying, spend time getting your show together. All those things are things that, you know, you've got some downtime or some space that was unexpected. Put that space, that energy into what you know will be useful in the future.
I think the last thing I wanted to mention about this was just health and physical health. I mean, mental health, I don't feel qualified to give advice on, but that if, you know, people are feeling, what's the word? Isolated, quarantine, whatever, like move your body. And there's like Do Yoga With Me is a free website with, you know, tons of yoga workouts, you know, you're, we can still go out
to do yoga with you.
Yes, I'm the teacher of every video. That would be horrifying. You would not want to go to that website. Also, like, don't forget, we're allowed to go outside, people. It's not like we have to stay indoors during this weird time. Like, if you have a yard and there's no one coughing in that yard, go out in your yard, throw a frisbee, do some push-ups, whatever. Like, some touring musicians I know are really good while they're out on the road, finding ways to get exercise and stay healthy. And I'm sure they'll bring that same mindset to when they're off the road for any number of weeks or whatever, unexpectedly, I'm sure though. But I also know plenty of touring musicians who don't take care of themselves and they eat crap and they never exercise because the stresses and travel or whatever. And so maybe this is a time for those types of people when they're off the road to find some health.
Yeah. On that topic, I would say definitely, you know, that you need to take care of yourself. In our modern world, it's very odd. We got sent home from CD Baby, well, at the end of the day, but yesterday we all left and told that everyone was going to be working remotely for, you know, at least through next week. We'll see what happens then. It felt like school was being let out early. It was really weird because everyone's like, bye, I don't know when I'll see you again. It was odd. And I should note that, if it isn't obvious at this point, CD Baby, we can work 100% remote, no problem. Business as usual as far as managing all our artists' music and getting their music where it needs to be. No service delays whatsoever. But I'm driving home and I pull into my neighborhood and it's a sunny spring day here in the Portland area. The trees are blooming. My daughter's riding around on her bike with all these other kids. And I'm like, this is really weird. Like, if I open up Twitter, the world's ending. But here on my street, it just feels like life is normal. So delightful. I think, yeah, I think that I would say, outside of taking care of yourself and not stress eating and getting so wound up where your muscles are all tight and you're just in a ball of stress, take care of yourself physically, but it's okay to walk away from the internet. I joked at the beginning that I had been on vacation, and I was on vacation. I did not look at the internet much, and I knew what was going on, and I didn't look at social media much. And I knew enough to know that I knew what was going on in the world, but I did not get so fixated on it where you just mentally, it's easy to get whipped up into a frenzy and just be overcome with fear. And I would just say, safeguard yourself against those things. Put that energy towards writing new songs or you know, things that, you know, bring joy in your life. Because it's really easy to sit there and waste a whole night refreshing Twitter just to see the crazy, wacky stuff people are saying and realize you just wasted a whole evening and now you just feel weird and anxious. And I'm obviously no mental health expert either, but it's one of those things where we have a hard time just saying, I know enough to take care of myself, to take care of those around me. I know the protocol, what's happening on the world. I don't need to fixate on it so much that it turns me into a crazy person. And so that's my advice.
That's totally true. And I mean, I know this episode is supposed to be relevant in the long term, but just to speak about the current circumstance, there is that point beyond which there's nothing else you can do. If you still feel healthy and you're doing what you can to protect others around you, you don't really need any more information. You just need to know what to do if things go downhill. And if, as long as you know what that process is at any step in the way, then like, you don't need to be ingesting lots of fear or even statistics and stuff if what they do is drive anxiety.
Yeah. Just guard yourself against that. I think we all know when we've crossed the line personally, because, you know, sometimes on Twitter, I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. This person just said the craziest thing. And then you're refreshing. Oh, this person just upped it, you know, and you're like, and then it turns from, hey, this is kind of funny, to maybe the world is ending. Now I'm scared. Everyone's buying toilet paper. I think that's silly. Maybe they know something I don't. and then it just whips, you know, it's not productive and healthy. I think that's important. Make sure you're taking care of yourself. Even when you are touring, that's a challenge. And when you're off the road, it can be a challenge. The last thing I had that wasn't mentioned, we started talking about video some, but this might be an opportunity for you to try and do some online lessons or just make a video series about some lessons if you have some skills in that area and have just never had the time. That's some of those things that you might look into that could be some temporary revenue streams or even a long-term revenue stream if you have time to shoot a little video series that does well for you. But looking at, you know, Chris, you mentioned like, what skills do you have that you can offer? That might be a skill that you can offer in the meantime.
You know what I think I need to do is do a tutorial on my live streaming setup right now while people are, you know, considering jumping to live streaming.
There you go. Yeah, you got a nice setup there.
To do a little run through.
And you should. All right. Well, we hope everyone gets back out on the road soon. If you have questions, comments, tips, or anything that you want to add to the conversation, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And we do have a couple emails and at least one phone call. Let's go to the phone call first.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Hi, Kevin and Chris. My name is Keats Conlin. Keats like the poet and Conlin like a con that's long without the G. I'm a Canadian singer-songwriter who just switched my old album to CD Baby, and I'm planning on releasing a new EP as well this summer. I was planning on releasing it all at once, but then some friends were telling me about this thing called waterfall releasing in order to get your individual songs featured on more Spotify playlists. But I feel like I wasn't quite understanding the concept and why it's a better way to release your songs. Just wondering if you guys have heard about this concept of waterfall releases and whether it's a worthwhile way to release an album. Thanks so much for your lighthearted and informative podcasting. I've learned a lot since becoming a listener. Also, as someone named after a poet, I love the band name, Kevin. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you, Keats. So I hadn't heard it referred to as waterfall releasing before.
I have, only because, I don't know, a year or a year and a half ago, whenever the Chainsmokers, I think, were the first band that got a ton of attention for doing this. And they did exactly, they put a single out and then they put out a 2-song release that had a new song and then that single. Then they did a 3-song release that, so the previous release tracks always get sort of pushed back in the track listing with the newest song up front. But then every time they have basically releasing a bunch of singles, but they are just building towards an EP or an album.
We've done a lot of talks about this, and it's, you know, there's lots of advice on this topic throughout our podcast. Without knowing what Keats is doing, I would say that might be the right way. I mean, here's what we typically recommend. We typically recommend, like, if an artist walked up to me and said, I've got a 7-song EP, I would say, hey, well, let's take a song or two and set them up and then do the release like 1 month after the other, set them up. And that gives a little time to build momentum, to look for opportunities on the platforms, you know, like playlisting. For the average independent artist, the situation that you said with the chain smokers, the average independent artist is not the chain smokers.
Right.
And so each song is not going to get picked up by a Spotify playlist. And that's really the main opportunity when you release something, a Spotify playlist, you know, they've got their release tool that they have, and you can, if you've got an EP or an album, you can earmark a song to be the one that you're looking to feature. And if you have a single, obviously that's the one that you're going to feature. So if you think that you have multiple opportunities there, you could break it up more, but at some point you got to think about the fans, and the fan experience for a lot of people, I think, can start to feel really disjointed if you're just releasing the deep album cuts as singles. And if I knew more about what she had, I might have different advice, but that's pretty consistent with what we've said. We've usually said, take a single or two, set them up in advance, allow you to build some momentum, look for playlisting opportunities. Once your music's out, it's not like playlisting opportunities go away. And even with Spotify, it's not like they go away. You can work individual songs yourself. And when things bubble up, sometimes they pop up onto playlists on their own. But I don't think that you have to release that way.
In complete agreement. I feel like two or three singles before an album is good. But once it gets beyond that, it's like, all right, just put the thing out already.
And, you know, if you're someone like the Chainsmokers, they typically, you know, the way they make music is so collaborative and features different artists that even if it is an album, to me, it really wouldn't feel all much like an album of music that has to be together, because each song's sort of an individual thing anyway. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Keats. I hope that helped. Let's move on to an email. We've got an email that's along similar lines about setting up a release, but here we go. Hey, Kevin and Chris, my name is Josh Travis. I'm an Americana singer-songwriter from Erie, PA. I have plans to start recording an album this spring, and I'm loosely planning to put it out about a year later if all goes well. My question is in regards to marketing the album before it's released. If I take a year to work on it, I wonder if I shouldn't start talking about it in emails and social media until closer to its release. I'm apprehensive to announce I'm working on a new record and keeping my fans waiting several months before I release it. I at least release some singles. I know the idea of release dates and albums are debatable these days, and maybe that's my problem. How early would you recommend I announce I'm working on a new record, and what would a good marketing timeline look like in the early stages? Thanks for all your advice and input, Josh. Do you have thoughts, Chris? I've got a lot, but I'll let you take it first.
Yeah, what I have is a bunch of bad advice.
Because a trail of tears?
Yeah, I should say I should be disqualified from advising on this topic because I have a sordid history of saying, hey, I'm in the studio now finishing up this album. Hopefully it'll be out in 6 months. And then years pass. Meanwhile, I started some other record no one knows about, and then I just release it. So I'm terrible at that. Is like the worst thing for me is setting realistic expectations for both myself and my audience. So I hand it off to you with that.
Here is my rule of thumb. And I've had many discussions with bandmates on. It's that when you're in the studio and you have no idea, no definitive timeline where something has to be out, like you're not working with a record company that says, hey, this will be out in the fall. We don't know the exact date yet, but it, as far as, you know, it fits with our business plan, you must release something in this timeline. Most of us aren't working under that pressure. So my rule of thumb is when you're in the studio, you can talk about the process. You can talk about making new music, but don't blow it all then. Think about a storyline, and that when you do have a release date, you want to have the story arc that feels like it builds, and you don't want this 2-year gap in that story arc. But also, you don't want to be in the studio saying, making promises when this will be out, because we're never right. So when you're in the studio, you don't have to end every post with the new music will be out in June, because June comes and goes, and it's maybe ends up being April the following year. So that's the thing I always say. Don't start setting this like it's going to be next month, and then the following month you change it. It's going to be the next month, because that really becomes irritating to fans, and you just become noise, and they tune you out. So my thing is, like, it's okay when you're in the studio, you know, talk about being in the studio, the process, but save a lot of that content for when you know things are wrapping up and you can start telling a more cohesive story that feels like it goes somewhere to the point of release. So if you're talking about specifics, I start thinking about, you know, 3 months out, 4 months out. It depends on who you are and what you have going on. Like, if you're someone like us who doesn't play a lot of shows, to me, it feels like, if I'm talking about a new album coming 5 months in the future, that feels like an eternity away, because there's going to be a lot of nothing in between.
Yeah. I mean, just to also to reemphasize something you said, like, once you have a more clear timeline and you have something that's about to come out, like, then when you start talking about it in a more compelling way, you also have things to give your fans that can do. They could pre-order the album. They could pre-save a song. They can, you know, read a press release, whatever it is to build energy towards the release. Like, it's kind of worthless to share too much of that stuff if there's nothing they can actually do about it.
Yeah. That's the other thing. It's like, when you keep giving people information and you're diehard fans are like, I can't do anything with that information. That's great. I'm excited. And they may make a mental note. They may not. But it's best to start telling the story when soon they're able to take some sort of action. So that's why it's nice to set up an album with a single or two, because it gets them in that action mode. You have a couple things, even if you just have an album and two singles from that album leading up to it, you have two action items for them that they start involving themselves with, engaging with, and then it leads up to the album and they're kind of in this active mode with your music, as opposed to just giving them information. We all have plenty of information these days. I don't need more information, but if I can do something, apparently now I've got a lot of time on my hands. So. So anyway, we've put out some timelines before if you wanted specific dates of, like, you know, if you want to get press, a major press, you're going to need at least 3 months, maybe more if you want local press, you know. So it all depends. But as far as telling your fans, I think 2 months, I don't know, 2 to 3 months, I wouldn't start telling them that the music's going to be here probably much earlier than that. And I would always recommend waiting until you have the exact release date. Because moving that around, it just becomes confusing, and making promises that don't come true is annoying. So mm-hmm. I hope that helps. All right, let's go back to a call. Here we go. It's about TikTok.
Hey, guys. This is Ronnie Clement of Monmouth, Maine. I'm in the band Column Blow, as well as doing some solo stuff now. Question for you. You had mentioned on your recent podcast about TikTok favoring music that's already on the platform, which is great, because my new song, Where'd My Happy Go, you guys submitted to them, and it's on the platform, and it's got like a 15-second whatever it is, clip or whatever, but the downside of that is it's not the part of the clip that I want, and it's the only part on there, but since that's already on the platform, you're saying the favorite stuff or the stuff that's already on the platform is favored. I'm trying to figure out, is there a way to add more different clips of the song so that I can use the chorus part? Because I thought I could come up with a theme of that. You know, Where'd My Happy Go, and have a bunch of videos of, I don't know, sad-looking puppy dogs or something. I don't know, whatever. But anyway, is there a way to add additional clips from CD Baby onto TikTok? Okay, thanks. Ronnie Clement, Monmouth, Maine, Column Blow Band, and solo music. Thank you very much. See you guys. Good podcast. Anyway.
Thanks for the call, Ronnie. Ronnie's in Maine.
Not that far from me. I think Monmouth is 20-ish minutes away from where I live.
Yeah. Maybe you can do a show with Column Blow.
Hello, Ronnie Clement.
One point of clarification before we answer his question is that I want to make sure it's known that I suspect that they prefer music used on the platform, like videos that are using music on the platform. I don't know that for a fact, but just my testing made it seem like videos that used music native to the platform seemed to be performing better, because a lot of the videos, they make it real easy for you to use the same song, and that's part of the viral nature of TikTok and how it works. So it makes sense that they would feature those videos. In my experimenting, that seemed to be the case, but I do not have that in writing from anyone official. Just wanted to make that clear. As far as the clips, they have an algorithm that looks for what they think is the best part of the song to feature the 15 seconds. In the future, there will be a tool where you can adjust that and let them know what is the best 15 seconds. But at this time, that is not available. It might not be a bad idea to, you could do a 35 second cut of that song, or maybe a 30 second cut of that song, and just distribute it to TikTok for that purpose.
Yeah. I don't know if he described this in his call, but when TikTok finds that moment that they want to make available, you can still toggle on either side of it, right?
Yeah, I believe it. What they do is they find a 30-second spot, and then you can toggle 15 seconds. Yeah, because you can toggle around stuff.
Right.
So it's an algorithm. I don't know how it works. I don't know how much it gets adjusted or if it does, but that's how it works at the moment. And tools will be coming that will allow you to dictate which 30-second segment they allow you to choose the 15-second clip from. But not at this time. But the way Ronnie's thinking about it is the perfect way to be thinking about it. They've got a song called Where Did My Happy Go? And he said he wanted to make a video with like sad puppies or something. but I could see people responding and doing things with a lyric like that. So I think you're on the right track there, Ronnie. All right, I think we've got one more email. Might as well read it because no one else has anything to do going on. They can't go outside. They're sequestered.
If ever there was a podcast quarantine, 14 hours long, this is it.
DIY Musician Podcast Quarantine Edition. All right, here's the email. Hey there, Kevin. Emerging as a new artist in Portland, I recently stumbled upon the DIY podcast and have been very much enjoying it. I have a recorded song that has been mixed and mastered. What are the typical steps an artist should take before distributing it via CD Baby? And then in parentheses, it says copyright, ASCAP, others. I'm not quite certain what is recommended to do to protect my rights before releasing it. Any assistance would be appreciated. Thanks. Well, we can talk to the rights thing. I think that's the way we'll focus this, because we've got a lot of podcasts that deal with this, especially the one that we did not too long ago called Starting Your Music Career from the Beginning or something like that. That episode's been very popular.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, you know, Jeff, if you sign up with CD Baby and you use the CD Baby Pro option, if you don't have an account with ASCAP already and you haven't registered as a writer with them, we'll do that for you, whether you choose ASCAP or BMI. And so you don't have to do that ahead of time. You just sign the song up, enter in all the information, and we'll connect all those pieces for you. As far as copyright, when you write your music and put it in a tangible form, your song is automatically copywritten. But when you register it, you get the full weight of the law behind you if you need to enforce any infringements. And for copywriting it, there's a service that we recommend called Cosigned. I believe there's a link to it from the dashboard in CD Baby, but they really take all the headache out of trying to figure out what the right form is to fill out and all that. And of course, I'm talking about if I'm assuming that Jeff is in the United States, because that's for the United States. So you can go to that service called Cosigned. You'll find it in the CD Baby dashboard, and they'll help you register that copyright, and then you'll be fully protected. And I think as far as like making sure your rights are in order before releasing it, I think that'll take care of it. You'll want to sign up with Sound Exchange and all that, but signing up through CD Baby Pro and registering the copyright co-signed will get you where you need to go to get that music out there.
Indeed. That didn't go that long.
No. All right. Well, if you've got questions, comments, or anything that you want to talk about, whether it's from shows being canceled to pandemics to buying hordes of toilet paper to whatever, or just music, we can talk music. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. I think that's going to do it. You know, Chris, I live in Camas, Washington, and the hub of Camas, Washington is a giant paper mill that makes toilet paper. So little did I know I was strategically buying a home perfectly set up for the...
Wait, but does that... I imagine on the supply chain, it doesn't actually make you any more likely to be able to buy toilet paper, does it?
Well, they give it to the community all the time. Camas... Yeah. Like at Camas days when they have a float, they throw toilet paper as they go down the road. And we're going to be, when the economy goes to toilet paper, I'm going to be living like a king.
You are set. That's great to know.
That's right. Little did people know. Anyway, I did, we're pretty much done with the podcast at this point. But I did mention our release and how it relates to all this. And it's kind of interesting. So I thought I'd share. You know, we have a new song coming out next week on March 18th. It's called Love is the Ocean. I'm very excited about it. It sounds very different from other small town poet stuff. And, you know, our sound has evolved quite a bit on these new tracks we're working on. It was weird because, you know, like I said, things always get delayed and stuff happens where, you know, you think this song, the vibe of it's kind of mellow, but it's got this upbeat drum loop going and a lot of space. It's a lot of cool sounds. And I thought this song needs to land in winter because if it doesn't, it might not fit the vibe of the season. It's definitely not the song you lead with in summer, for sure. And, you know, as things go, it started getting pushed back later and later. And I thought originally that we'd get it out in January. And so I was looking at March. It's starting to get sunny here in Portland. I'm like, oh no, is the vibe of this song going to be lost? And then also all this stuff started happening with the pandemic and just lots of stuff going on in the world. I'm like, it feels weird just to do a normal like marketing campaign. I don't know. It just feels weird. A lot of it's happening out there. I mean, half of life is going on as normal. It's weird. So I was setting up the release and the guys and I were talking and the tone of the song is very much about the theme of the song is looking for answers, you know, fearing the forces that seem against you and looking, trying to find the right answer, the right answers or the right thing to move you forward. But ultimately realizing that love is always the productive option and the thing that will move us forward. And I thought, wow, I wouldn't pick a pandemic to release a song in, but it really does fit the vibe and the feeling that is out there right now. So it was just really weird. And then you're like, well, I don't want to try and just capitalize on that. That's really wrong. But so I'm with this release, we're going to do a pre-save. I'm getting ready to make that go out today and, you know, give away some t-shirts and stuff for people that pre-save it. But at the same time, the marketing messaging is really taking a different tone of like, this is just acknowledging that it's kind of weird. For us, we're really excited about the song and want to scream about it, but it's weird, you know, to just feel like things are different. But then also how this song just kind of landed at a time where I think people might connect with it more than they would have otherwise, which is weird too to think about. So yeah. Anyway, well, it's not the normal release cycle.
I think your instincts are probably right though, to address how circumstances are changing the way you think about releasing it and include that as part of the story, because I remember a bunch of things that came out around 9/11 that had, you know, couldn't help but have that event like imprinted on them in some way. And there were, I'm forgetting the examples, but there were ways in which the artists addressed that without seeming like they were capitalizing on it.
Yeah.
And yes. To go back to your initial thought, I don't think your song loses anything for coming out in the spring. I kind of see what you say about the summer, but I would never have said, oh, that song is a winter song.
I know. It's just one of those things where you're working on it. We recorded it in December. It's got this kind of dark, moody vibe. I mean, we recorded it in a dark basement, you know, and it was written in my basement originally the year before when it was dark and gross. And so then you're like, this isn't the song people are going to like, let's drive to our summer vacation and turn on the hits. I mean, I think it's a great song, but I don't know. It's just weird. It's weird. So we'll see how it goes. I'm very proud of it. I think it's something that we continue to evolve. And if no one else likes it, we like it. And I feel like we continue to grow and challenge ourselves. And that's all I can ask for. So
cool. And my favorite part of your song, which everyone should listen to, is when the vocal delay just keeps spinning and cycling on itself.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that part too. I thought the correct answer though was the guitar solo. That should have been your favorite part.
That too. I wanted to get us, mention a part that's towards the end of the song so everyone will listen through.
There you go. That's the way to do it. And I did create, you know, I had someone make album art for me, but then last night I was up late. I made a carousel. I deconstructed the Photoshop file the person gave me and made this carousel based off of the album art that for Instagram that will, you know, be a little bit more engaging. And also one of the things that we highlighted, but I don't think we highlighted enough, that those carousels, when you have like 5 or 6 pictures, and it just means that you got a post with multiple photos on Instagram, they feature that to the top of your most engaged users feed for every photo. So even if they see the first photo, if they don't swipe, the next time they log in, they might see the next photo. And so it's a great way to keep getting something in front of people without having to pay for it.
Sweet.
Well, Chris, I'm used to not seeing you for weeks at a time.
But you're not used to not seeing anyone.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. maybe we'll just podcast. That's all we'll do now.
Yeah, we'll
because everything else is gone. All right. Well, again, our listener line is 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And yeah.
Enjoy your toilet paper monopoly.
That's right. I'm building a toilet paper empire over here. Actually, for the record, I am not.
Yes,
I don't want people to think I'm like podcasting from this toilet paper fort I built in my basement now. Although that would be a good sound booth.
Yeah. Now you're prepared to make a lot of music in the zombie apocalypse.
All right. Well, stay safe out there and listen to podcasts. Stay home, make music. Wash your hands, make more music, and then we'll be here. We're all in this together. We're here for you. And we'll catch you on the next episode.
See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.